You're listening to The Morning Rush with Bill Carroll on News Talk 580 CFRA.
What if you held an election and nobody cared? It's like one giant by-election, isn't it? There's a handful of people who are really into politics or talking about it, but is there a buzz? Certainly not. I figured it was going to be so easy to get dinner reservations tonight because it's my wife's birthday. Ha! It's election night. Nothing to it, right? So I left it until, you guessed it, I'm a man. I left it until a few days ago. No, I didn't leave it till yesterday or today. I did start calling around a couple of days ago. Everybody was full. Like, well, what about a little bit later once the campaign results? Oh, yeah, that's election night. Nobody I was booking a table with even knew that it was election night. It is on just about nobody's radar. Now, I'll get out and vote. I always do. But I wonder what the voter turnout is even going to look like this year. And then you get the opinion polls that show, wow, the conservatives look like they're way ahead. It's everywhere you go, there's a headline that says the conservatives are going to win a majority again. Now, I got to tell you, sometimes the opinion polls are wrong. And sometimes there are important local races. Don't be that guy. Don't be the guy who doesn't vote and then you complain for the next 4 years. Just go out and vote. Even if ultimately you're voting for someone who's not going to win, you got to at least make a statement that it wasn't just a runaway, that there are some people out there who hold the same political views that you do. There's nothing wrong with that, right? Get out there, show the colors, whatever colors they happen to be. So do we do election trail mix an hour from now?
I grabbed a clip of each leader from yesterday, so including the Green Party if we want to do it.
All right. The biggest issue that I'm hearing people talk about is now the economy. Inflation, the cost of everything. The problem is I think people kind of recognize if any government's responsible for that, it's the federal government, and maybe they're not all that responsible for that. So nobody was – I know there were a few moments where it almost popped up as an election issue in Ontario. Other than maybe spending some of our own money on all of us to cushion the blow, gasoline taxes came up, for example, provincial taxes. But other than that, you know, this is an international thing. And the Bank of Canada, I guess, we're going to have to count on their monetary policy. I'm not inspired by their decision to raise interest rates yesterday by half a percentage point, because it seems to me like they were the ones telling us for months, don't worry about inflation. It's temporary. Clearly, they were wrong and they moved too late. And a lot of economists I saw yesterday are saying, it's also too little. All they've done is take their foot off the gas pedal a little. They didn't hit the brakes on inflation. So watch inflation continue to rise. That's what I'm hearing. Well, okay, great. Bank of Canada. Bank of Montreal chief economist Douglas Porter says the half point rate to 1.5% still may not be enough to curb inflation.
Frankly, they need a little bit of luck. They need things like commodity prices and supply chains to help a bit here. You know, the absolute worst thing to happen right now would be for oil prices and grain prices to take another big step up and for supply chains to remain snarled. I think we're right on at the knife's edge now.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't have a lot of confidence in governments that keep being surprised by things that shouldn't surprise us. There's a lack of everything, and we can't believe the prices have gone up. And then I hear people say things like, you know, we better be careful, move quickly before inflation becomes entrenched. This is the thing about the economy. Everybody quotes their favorite economist to tell you what's going to happen, and like they have the only answers. They don't. It's an incredibly large beast with a lot of moving pieces. There's no way to know what a war that suddenly breaks out in Ukraine is going to do internationally. It's really hard to follow it, but they're supposed to be the experts. But there were a couple of things that were obvious, that people who spent 2 years at home might want to travel again. Doesn't that seem obvious to you? 2 years at home. I gave up two winter vacations and I didn't see my grandparents for the last 2.5 years. I'm getting on a plane. Whoa, we're surprised so many people are showing up at the airport. No, I'm not surprised by that. Not surprised at all. People keep spending money. And now that the interest rates are going up, people are starting to spend money before things get even, and inflation is going up. People are starting to spend money before they get even more expensive. Oh, and half the world is sick with COVID, and we're surprised the supply chain is broken. Why would you be surprised by that? See, people are not dying at the same rate they used to, but they're still staying home sick. How many people do you personally know who couldn't work for at least 2 or 3 days in the last month? I bet it's plenty. Go back 2.5, 3 months into the end of winter, into the beginning of spring. Everybody seemed to have COVID. We had a new schedule being posted almost, it seemed like every day. Okay, we know that Matt was going to fill in for Jim, who was going to fill in for Janice, but now Janice has COVID, so now Jim is going to have to fill in for Matt, who's moving to do what Janice did, and that thing that Jim did, that's not going to, no one's doing that this week, so that's just not going to happen.
And that's not even a slight exaggeration. Those were the emails we were getting every week, every day.
And, that's going to continue because the wastewater numbers show that there's been another little increase right after the May 2-4 weekend. So even more people you know are going to get sick. And people who bragged about not getting sick, like my wife, everyone in the house got it except me. Boom. It was her turn. Your turn will come unless you're going to hide at home for the rest of your life. And there's certainly some people doing that. I was in a few places yesterday where people were eyeing me up and down like, you're not wearing a mask. That's correct. I've had 3 shots. Just recover from COVID. I'm no threat to you. And you're no threat to me. Not right now. Another couple of months from now, maybe that'll change. But for now, it is what it is. Which is where the Prime Minister is wrong when he says the pandemic is over. That's technically correct. But it's not where people are mentally. He is out of touch. That's why they don't see all the economic changes happening. Because they're so caught up in the being afraid of the virus that they forget or don't realize most people aren't. They're returning to the office. They're shopping again. They're traveling again. And people cannot take the pandemic being real anymore. And it no longer matters to them that it is real. Because you know what? We've changed the way we calculate our risk aversion. Our risk tolerance has been recalculated probably for our entire lifetime. Yeah, COVID, whatever. I got it a couple of years ago. It was bad, but I survived. I'll keep up to date with my shots, take my chances. I'm living my life. That's where we are. And it feels like Justin Trudeau is the only guy in the country left who doesn't know that. 6:15, The Morning Rush. Like.
You're listening to The Morning Rush with Bill Carroll on News Talk 580 CFRA.
I really worry about the Prime Minister who's making decisions based on a false premise. I do. He's got to control this runaway economy and runaway inflation, and he's doing it, and even with travel, especially with travel this week, he's doing it from a false premise that the pandemic is over. He got frustrated yesterday. The pandemic is over because people are going, why are you continuing these travel restrictions? Why can't Canadians travel more freely? Well, I got a couple of sound bites here. Let's listen.
The reality is, as much as people would like to pretend we're not, we're still in a pandemic. There are Canadians who die every single day because of COVID-19 in our hospitals. We are still at risk, we're particularly at risk as fall approaches of new variants.
Yeah, here's where he's just completely wrong. And I tried to explain this on TV just now, on CTV Morning Live, in a way that would at least minimize the negative emails, but people are going to hear what they want to hear. The pandemic is over because people have decided it's over. That is not, I'm not saying that's a scientific reality. I'm not even saying it's smart. Yes, scientifically, the pandemic is still on. It's still a dangerous disease. And there may be variants that come up in the fall that our vaccines, which are not 100% effective, are going to be even less effective, keeping you out of the ICU and maybe out of the morgue. I know all of that. But when you're the Prime Minister making decisions about where the country is headed, you have to take into account where the country is psychologically. And I'm here to tell them it's over. The pandemic is over. And it's not because we're stupid. Most of us realize, hey, you know what? I got my three shots. I've had COVID, but I could still get it again. I could still get really sick. I mean, it's not a high risk for me. Well, what about new variants in the fall? Yeah, this virus could change in a way that it'll kill me next year, even though I got vaccinated and I've already had it. I understand that. But people are thinking two things. Number one, I'm willing to live with the risk because I have no choice. Psychologically, I couldn't go on living the way I was living. Living in fear, living in hiding, having no social network. People can't do that forever. They just can't. And they've weighed the risk and the reward, and they've decided the pandemic for them is over. And I was calling people stupid for that attitude a year ago, because a year ago it was stupid. Right now, it's just a little dumb. But I share that point of view. I'm right there with you. I'm a little bit dumb about this because I can't do this anymore. Can you? I've gotten to the point where it's like, I can't even put this mask on now. Seriously. I got to travel by plane. I got to wear the mask. I've had three shots. I just had COVID. Why am I wearing a mask? I'm at that point. I understand the scientific argument. I do. But life at some point has to be worth living. And Canadians have, for the most part, decided they're going to live it. They've recalculated their risk factor. They've said, you know what? It's dangerous. I'm going to live anyway. That's what they've done. And so they'll behave accordingly. That's why they're this federal government surprise. Oh, a lot of people are lining up for passports. We didn't see this coming. Then you're a moron. If you didn't know that after 2 years of staying at home, when people got vaccinated and already had COVID in a lot of cases, that they were going to make up for lost travel, that they were going to visit grandma and grandpa for the first time in 2.5 years, they were going to take that vacation they've been longing to take for the last couple of years, you really missed the boat. And he's still missing the boat. And I'm concerned about that because he's making decisions about where the economy is going based on this idea that if he just tells us often enough that there's still a pandemic, damn it, we'll behave accordingly. We're not going to. And the other danger, do we have one more soundbite of him, by the way? Play the other one.
We need to make sure we're doing everything we can to keep Canadians safe. And I know people are eager to get back to things we love. But what will also further damage our tourism industry is if we get another wave, if we get more serious impacts from COVID. That's why every single time we have been anchored in science.
It's not that people aren't going to return it. They already have. Everybody's back to living the life except going to the office. Some people are still staying at home. Elon Musk is now saying to his executives, get back to work. You don't get to stay at home while factory workers take all the risk. My workers on the line are taking the risk. Get back to work. It's not working anymore like this. I need you back at the office. And more you're going to see that attitude. But our prime minister, he's also going to lose the room in the fall if he doesn't let us live now and recognize, hey, it's still dangerous. There are still risks, but we have to live our lives. If he doesn't say that now, he'll have lost us in the fall. If some new variant comes along and it really is much more dangerous, no one's going to listen to him. We have recalculated our risk tolerance, and our leader doesn't understand that yet or thinks he can still fight against it. He can't. You got to throw your hands up in the air and go, people are going to do it. Matt, you've been saying this for longer than me. I think you had that attitude a little early.
Yeah, I've been on this page for a while.
But it's a matter of degrees.
And I got COVID after I said it. And you know what? It sucked for a week.
Yeah, and I said it after I got COVID because now I'm like, okay, I've had COVID. So I'm not living in fear. I got it. It wasn't great. I had a pretty tough go. Not as tough as many. I don't want to get sick like that again. But even if I do, I'm still going to live my life. Even with that, even knowing that I could get that sick for a month, what choice do I have? That's what it's come down to. Because the life we've been asked to live in the last 2 years, out of necessity, was not tolerable. It's, and I've said this before, it's why you see everyone goes underground when the bombs start to drop. We've seen it in Ukraine. I was thinking at the time of more London and the Blitz because we didn't have Russia attacking Ukraine. But we've seen it in Ukraine. Everyone went into the underground and they stayed there for 4 or 5 days. And then after 6 days, they started to venture out and kick soccer balls around on the street and wait for the air raid sirens before they took shelter. They took some risk and went back outside because they had no choice. We can't stay down here forever. This is crazy. We got to get out of here. People, Sarajevo, people went grocery shopping while snipers picked them off because they had to eat. They had to feed their kids. You lived with the risk. That's what Canadians are doing. And our prime minister is making plans based on a false premise. The pandemic is over because people have decided it's over. And there's nothing any government leader can do about that now. 6:31, the Morning Rush.
Boy, what a shot this is for Tim Stützle. His second goal of the season. Stings this one off the inside of the post and into the back of the net.
At the Rink with Gord Wilson.
Good morning, Gord.
Good morning to you, Mr. Carroll.
All right, so the Lightning didn't win the first game, but I called them to win the series, not any one particular game.
No, no, you didn't. Yeah, you said Tampa, and you didn't say in how many. And with a prediction of how many games, it requires wins and losses, and you didn't say any of that. So it's 1-0, the Rangers. They won on home ice again. They're 7-1 now at Madison Square Garden, and it is proving to be an extremely difficult rink in which to play. And the Tampa Bay Lightning found out the hard way. Although you know what, that with the Lightning at I think 4-2 now, 4-3 on the road, they have shown that they can win on the road. I'm not sure if Madison Square Garden will be all that intimidating. I think the fact that they went 8 days in between games probably played a factor in last night's loss.
Yeah, I watched a bit of the first period, and when I saw the score this morning, 6-2, I was a bit surprised because, to me, the Lightning were, in all the old-fashioned measures, the advanced stats guys would make fun of me, but shots on goal seemed like they had more chances. I thought the Lightning looked good. What did I miss? Did they fall apart later, or is that score deceiving?
No, you didn't miss too much. The score probably not deceiving in terms of what the Rangers did with momentum. They simply took advantage of it. I like the fact that Tampa Bay, if you're looking for a close series, had to play catch-up in this early on, and you saw that it was 1-1 after one. It was 2-2 at one point, and then the Rangers they took advantage of some momentum. They got a quick goal to make it 3-2, and that was a quick goal after it was 2-2 after Palat tied it. Less than 2 minutes later, young Philip Hedl scored, and then he added another before the period would end. And down 4-2, it was very tough. Now the Tampa Bay Lightning would go into the third thinking, "Okay, we're in okay shape. We're playing good hockey. We're down by two. We get the next one, and all of a sudden, the hometown team is nervous as all get out." But unfortunately for Tampa, the Rangers scored 30 seconds into the third, and then it was lights out. You know, the highlights.
What happened to their clutch goaltending?
Well, you know what? Yeah, Andrei Vasilevsky looked ordinary last night, and at the other end of the ice, Igor Shesterkin, who was the best goaltender in regular season play, was absolutely outstanding. He did all he could to help his team win that hockey game last night, and he was just the better of the two. He stopped 37 shots. Vasilevsky gave up 6 on 34 shots, and there were some clean shots that beat him. Mika Zibanejad's last goal, the 6th goal in the hockey game for the Rangers, was an absolute rocket, and it just beat Vasilevsky cleanly. So the Lightning have some work to do. I don't think they need to do any work or be concerned about the 6 goals they gave up because of Vasilevsky's reputation as being a clutch goaltender. They just have to play a lot better and a lot more consistent hockey in terms of their system, in terms of what they do at the other end of the ice, and clearly not get frustrated if Igor Shesterkin is going to play the rest of the series the way he played last night.
There's like 20 goals or something in the first two games of the final four. What the hell happened to tight checking, right? Playoff hockey, yeah. where I don't care if you score 10 goals a night during the regular season. It's not going to work in the playoffs. Well, it's working for a lot of teams.
Yeah, 8-6 the first game from Colorado and Edmonton. And then last night, another 8 goals scored. So 22 in total through the first two games, which is shocking. Not so shocking, I don't think, from the Western Conference Final with all the firepower that we see and will see on a nightly basis from those two teams, which will resume tonight. And Colorado obviously has a 1-0 series lead there. I guess the big question going into the Western series is who starts in goal for either team based on, you know, the 14 goals that were given up the other night. So good question. I think everybody anticipated last night's game to, if you're a betting person and taking the over-under and the over set at 5, you'd certainly take the under. Well, that changed in an awful hurry here with the Rangers and their 6-2 victory. I don't think that's going to continue. That trend won't. I think things will tighten up between both teams. Too many good quality scoring opportunities that should have been eliminated that probably will get eliminated as the series goes on. But I'm not sure I can predict the same for the Western Conference series. I think that's still going to be as wide open can be. And you know what? At least one coach, Jared Bednar, post-game the other night, said he was just fine. And obviously a winning coach is going to say all the good things and all the right things, but he was just fine with the score and obviously the outcome. You know what? Oftentimes I've heard DJ Smith say this a lot. When his team wins, but wins ugly, he usually prefaces his post-game comments by saying it's hard to criticize a win, but there are critical points that can be made even in victory. And when you give up 6 goals, you shouldn't win a hockey game. But when you have the ability to score 7 or 8, there's not much to criticize. So no surprise to hear that Jared Bednar, the head coach of the Avalanche, said, I like the way we played and probably will play the same way tonight.
So if you're like me and your team or teams are already out, and you're starting to now, you know, you're over the pain of not making the playoffs or getting turfed in the first round again, whatever it is.
6 straight years, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're, stop it now. You're asking questions now about what your team's going to look like next year.
Yeah.
Is there a rule or some rules or just an understanding that until the Stanley Cup is lifted, the teams are pretty quiet about what's going on? Because I noticed the Leafs general manager kind of apologized the other day when he said, look, I'm making this announcement on a Sunday about Jason Spezza joining the team because it was a day off. You know, we didn't want to get into the news cycle. So is that something that kind of happens as a general ceasefire about what happens in the NHL with signings and trades and all those things?
There is, yes. And the NHL frowns on, during postseason play, frowns on teams making big splashes. In other words, firing someone or hiring someone, doing something that is out of the ordinary, that takes away the spotlight from the actual games being played. And I don't know if it's cast in stone, but there's certainly an unwritten rule. And certainly the league emphasizes that the teams do things very, very quietly. And I think it was Jason Spezza who actually requested the announcement to be made on a Sunday, a non-game day. The NHL was quiet that day. It seemed a little bit odd that Sunday, one of these great players says, I'm packing it in my career. He didn't want to wait until after the Stanley Cup final. He's moving on. So good on him. It was a classy move by him to wait and do it on a quiet day. But yeah,
and not earth-shattering either, right?
No. I think everybody
really small move. Well, like Montreal saying, you know what, we're going to keep our coach around. Okay, not a big surprise to anyone.
No, you know what? It's big news in that market, though, and that did come as a bit of a surprise. Not the fact that Marty St. Louis is signed to a 3-year contract, but that it has been done on a game day. It was done yesterday and announced yesterday. But, again, teams have to be specific to their markets. And, you know, there's still been a lot of talk in Montreal. There's still an awful lot of talk about Carey Price and the health of that goaltender. So, the beat goes on for teams that are not in the postseason. You can only stay quiet for so long before your fans start to say, hey, what's going on here? And, you know, it's discretionary. Teams have to appease their own fans and make their own market you know, viable and noticeable on the news circuit as well. So it's a fine line to be drawn, but certainly when there's expected news, it can come up at any time.
You have a good night, Gord.
Well, thank you, sir. Yes, and enjoy the weekend, and we will talk to you next week.
And I'll have more wrong predictions to talk about.
I'm doubting that. I'm going to predict that you will have one prediction right this weekend.
Okay.
Okay.
Never bet on me, Gord. That's a very bad move. Gord Wilson, the Ottawa Senators color commentator from TSN 1200. It's the Morning Rush. Good morning, Doc.
Morning, Bill.
Meeting with your doctor in the metaverse, according to some experts, will become more the norm and not less. More virtual medical meetings. I bet you don't like this very much.
Not particularly, although this article focused on the use of devices for surgery. So doing remote surgery in areas where a surgeon may not be available. So that type of stuff's pretty cool and could certainly be very helpful for people because it's more mechanically based, right? It's using devices to do things where there's no access to a particular service. So that's very helpful. And like anything else, any tool that you use, it's always the right tool for the right job. So there are going to be instances where technological advances using virtual contact is going to be very helpful in certain situations.
Understand it more. Are these surgeries that even if you were there with the doctor in person, they'd be using robotics and the technology anyway?
In certain circumstances, that's exactly what would be happening.
So whether I'm in the same room with the patient or I'm 1,000 miles away, doesn't change it all that much.
That's right. And you have surgeons that are specifically trained to use these devices. So they train on also the remote access devices. There is a lot of hours that are put in to be able to do that. And so, you know, kudos to the surgeons that do that kind of stuff, because it's actually, one, it's cool. And two, it provides in some ways better care for procedures that require very fine movements, you know, reattaching limbs and reattaching nerves and putting things together where a steady hand is needed. And for some surgeons, as they get older, hands are not necessarily as steady, but they are. Their skill and their expertise can be translated into using the devices that give extra years of being able to do a certain procedure. So there are benefits both for the surgeon, where you don't lose that expertise, and for the patient, where that expertise is being able to be applied to the patient and help them out. But there are limits. And so this article does not discuss primary care. Part of the problems that primary care are facing are shortages of staff, shortage of physicians. Physicians are retiring as well. And no one really wants to go into family medicine anymore. There were 76 positions in Ontario, I believe, that went unfilled in the match, meaning that matching means that there are spaces in hospitals, in university programs, to allow medical students who graduate to then participate and go into areas of specialty, so that they do their training to end up with their license to do either be a family doctor or a surgeon or psychiatrist or whatever specialty they want to do. And in Ontario, there were 76 positions in family medicine that went unmatched, meaning that open spaces, it's like having job opportunities and no one took up the job. And so that is not a great thing. That really is foreboding, because you'll have no new family doctors or very few family doctors coming out. And those that come out don't want to take the financial risk of setting up a practice. So there's a lot of problems coming down the way, and we're seeing them right now. So, but to get back to the virtual stuff, there's something to be said by having person-to-person contact in the real world. There are a lot of nuances to communication that and a relationship that develops between your healthcare provider and the patient that cannot really be forged in a virtual world. I think virtual worlds in some ways reduce the ability to have empathy for your patient. There is a wall between you. It's not the same.
It's repairing a mechanical problem virtually in someone's knee using robotic devices is one thing. but detecting some subtle health issues with someone. Well, I always go back to quoting Dr. House. And Dr. House once said that sometimes a diagnosis is made by the smell on a patient's breath, or a firmness that's felt when you're touching their skin, or there are a lot of little subtle things that you can determine in your office that you just can't do over Zoom, right? And I know I'm facetiously quoting Dr. House, but I think there's probably some doctor advising that show that said that, and it sounds true to me.
Yeah, I mean, there, and as I said, it's the right tool for the right job. There are instances where over the phone, you know, you can come up with an idea of what the person has, but you know, someone says, "I've got this spot on my body," and I go, "You go, well, you know, I can't really tell what's going on." Even with a photo, sometimes it's just not the same thing. You have to see something at times, that there are qualities and nuances to doing our job that I don't expect people to be aware of, because that's not their job. But what really drives me a bit bonkers is when you have people who are in the virtual reality industry thinking that they're doctors, and seemingly thinking they know what it is that we do, and saying that this is now the next best thing, but truly understanding what it takes to be able to do our job.
Thank you, Doc. We love you.
Thank you,
Bill. We trust you. We believe you. Dr. Barry Dworkin, medical myth busting, host of Sunday House Call, Sunday afternoons at 3 on News Talk 580 CFRA. It's the Morning Rush.
Election Trail Mix. Doesn't always taste great.
Yes, it's almost over. It's election day, the election nobody wanted or cared about, apparently. Lackluster is a word I see coming up in a lot of media reports. I'm not hearing a lot of talk about the election. And then the polling comes along and shows that it's all just a matter of how many seats the current premier will get. You know what my views on politics are. You could probably take a pretty good guess who I would vote for. But let me just stop all of that and say, this is election day. It's time to ignore the polls. It's time to ignore people like me and my opinions. It's time to ignore everyone but yourself. Get out and vote. Sometimes the polls are wrong. Sometimes your local race matters, can make a difference. A good member of parliament or provincial parliament, whether they're in government or opposition, can do a lot for their community and can have a real influence in the House as well by asking the tough questions, by keeping government accountable. Or if their party forms government, even from the back benches, they can have influence. It matters who you vote for. Don't be deterred. It is one of the great freedoms and privileges we have in a democracy to go out and cast your ballot. I absolutely love it. I do. I love the whole exercise of going to the polling station, seeing my friends and neighbors, waving hello, having little chats in the lineup, and then going in and feeling like I get to help pick the government. And I've voted in a lot of lost causes. I've voted many times when I know this riding is going to go absolutely opposite to the way I'm voting. But I want my vote to be counted, and I want the person who's almost certainly going to win to know you don't have everybody. You need to work hard to win me over for next time. So get out and vote. Don't be discouraged. And as I said, sometimes on election night, you go, whoa, that's not what the polls said was going to happen. It matters. And it certainly looks like there are a couple of ridings in play here in Ottawa, a couple of close races that could go in an opposite direction they've been before. Maybe they will, maybe they won't. And on election day, I'm not even going to tell you which ridings those are. And you've heard all of that stuff. It's time for you to be alone with your own thoughts, make a decision. And the only thing I'm going to urge you to do today is just get out and vote. Now, what order do I do people in today? I'm going to save the last word for the Green Party. How about that? We'll start with PC leader Doug Ford, delivered remarks at his final campaign rally in Etobicoke, his home area, last night.
We're fighting for every single vote. Day after day, our team has been on the doorsteps, pounding the pavement in all of Ontario's 124 ridings.
The leader of the New Democrats said she would work with the federal government on decriminalizing drugs for personal use if her party forms government, an issue that got hot because of British Columbia in the last couple of days. Andrew Horvath says decriminalizing simple possession of drugs is part of her party's plan to address the overdose crisis, along with lifting a cap on safe drug consumption sites and improving access to treatment.
It's about saving lives. It is about saving lives. And that's what we have to do. And when we look at what's happened in Northern Ontario, the tragedies that have occurred, not just in Northern Ontario, of course, in our entire province. Every town, every city, every community has been impacted by the opioid crisis and by the overdose crisis.
Ontario's Liberal leader, Stephen Del Duca, says the decriminalization of hard drugs is not in his party's plan for the province right now. He was at an afternoon media event in Toronto, said that his party is, and his election platform, they're looking at other measures to fight the opioid crisis.
It's not on our plan right now. We have a lot of things that are included in our forward-looking, fair, and fully costed platform, including significant monies and efforts to confront the opioid addiction. The other crisis we know exists in this province right now that hasn't got the proper attention over the past 4 years from the Ford Conservatives.
And Green Party leader Mike Schreiner ended his campaign speaking about anybody at all? The environment, of course.
Watching the campaigns of the other parties who have barely talked about delivering solutions for the climate crisis, half measures and taking us backwards will not get the job done.
Get out and vote. I'll see you at the polls. And then we'll talk about the results tomorrow. It's going to be, you know, I'm always excited to watch the results pour in and see what your local race is doing, all that kind of stuff. And if you want to keep up to date, don't forget Ontario election coverage starts at 7 o'clock right here on News Talk 580 CFRA and CTV News Channel, followed by the CTV Election Night Special beginning at 9. Get your local live results on ctvnewsottawa.ca. It's been great the last couple of elections, really keeping up to date, so that's where I'll spend most of my time. Like I said, hope I'll see you at the polls. It's the Morning Rush, Bill Carroll. Golden.
You're listening to The Morning Rush with Bill Carroll on News Talk 580 CFRA.
7:26, it's The Morning Rush. Good morning. This is Election Day. That's always exciting. Our coverage begins tonight at 7 o'clock, and it's also on CTV News Channel if you want to watch TV. Then there's the CTV Election Night Special beginning at 9. And you can also listen for live local results with updates throughout the night right here on News Talk 580 CFRA. I like the website, ctvnewsottawa.ca. It has all the latest results as they're coming in. So that's a cool way to do it. And just keep an eye on, because it flashes up on TV, right? And you're like, oh, I missed it. That was my riding. Where, you know, I'm pretty sure I know who's going to win in my riding. But I'm not 100% sure. You never really know. I'm told that there are a few ridings that are in play tonight in Ottawa that a lot of people didn't think would be in play. And that's true in the Toronto area as well. So it could be an interesting night. The Bank of Canada announced exactly as expected yesterday that its key interest rate was going up. And they warned us it's not the end of it. Up half a point yesterday. What they're trying to do, I'm no economist, but when inflation kicks in, a lot of people start to spend, well, I better buy that car now. I better buy that house now before it goes up even more, costs even more. And well, here's the problem. That increases demand. Supply stays the same. So all of a sudden, that pushes prices up more, right? So you got to cool that off. And how do you stop people from spending when they know everything's going to cost more next week, next month? If they borrow money, you make it more expensive to borrow. So they go, well, that car may be more expensive in 2 months from now, but I can't afford the monthly payments anymore. And it's going to do the same to the housing market. So that's the plan. Will it work? A lot of economists, I say, you know what? They missed the boat. Bank of Canada was where our government continued to stimulate the economy through the Bank of Canada. I would also argue through their COVID spending. We overstimulated and we did it for too long. And I'm not just saying that today. You know, if you've been listening to the show, been saying that for a long time, and I'm not supposed to be the expert. They missed the boat. That's what a lot of very senior analysts said yesterday. Bank of Montreal chief economist Douglas Porter says 1.5 still may not be enough.
frankly, they need a little bit of luck. They need things like commodity prices and supply chains to help a bit here. You know, the absolute worst thing to happen right now would be for oil prices and grain prices to take another big step up and for supply chains to remain snarled. I think we're right at the knife's edge now.
Well, there's still a labor shortage. People are still getting COVID and taking time off because they're ill. And there's still a war going on in Ukraine. So what's to stop everything from increasing in price? All the things you just mentioned, what's there to stop it? Will interest rates be enough? I don't know. 7:29, the Morning Rush. Good morning. I'm Bill Carroll. Coming up after the 7:30 news, we mentioned yesterday Quebecor's CEO saying, yeah, we're not going to play those games in Quebec City right now while the ownership is going on. And then there was speculation about, was the plan maybe to move the team to Quebec, all of those things. And Anthony LeBlanc, the president of business operations, the Ottawa Senators, texted me right away and he said, I might have a thing or two to say about that. And I said, okay, then you come on the show and say them. And he's going to do that. And I think it's going to be a little reassuring if you're like me and you're a big hockey fan. We don't want to lose our NHL team. No way, no how. No. Even if you like to cheer against them, it's great to have them here, right? We need NHL hockey in this city. And I think he's going to reassure us that that will continue for the foreseeable future and beyond. But we'll find out. He's joining us coming up next, The Morning Rush.
You're listening to The Morning Rush with Bill Carroll on News Talk 580 CFRA.
7:39 on Election Day. And don't forget, we got you covered tonight on radio and on CTV, and we're everywhere. So when the results come in, you'll have them first. The polls close at 9 o'clock. Always exciting. I know it's been a lackluster kind of campaign, but still exciting to get out there and cast your ballot. And I will see you at the polls. And I'll probably see you at a Sens hockey game next year and for years to come, if we're to believe Anthony LeBlanc. And why wouldn't we? He's the president of business operations with the Ottawa Senators. And he was on me right away yesterday when we talked about the CEO of Quebecor, who said those 4 or 5 or 6 games the Senators had been in negotiation to play in Quebec City are not going to happen right now in the wake of the death of Eugene Melnyk, the team's owner. So he wanted to say, let's just clarify the record on this. So we're happy to have you do that. Thank you for joining us, Anthony. Appreciate it.
Good to be back on. And if I could, to start with, I'd like to wish your beautiful bride a happy birthday. I think you and I have a few things in common, and one of them is we really punch above our weight when it comes to the women in our lives. So happy birthday to her.
I haven't met the woman in your life, but if you punch half as far above your weight as I did, I can't wait to meet her because...
Well, hopefully soon.
That's impossible to imagine. So let's talk about the team. And you know, that's an interesting part about this city. People are such fans of the team, but they have this love-hate relationship with it. But the minute you say, ooh, they might be leaving, then people, it focuses the mind. So let's start with this Quebecor CEO and what he said about the games in Quebec City. What was the intention of playing games there? What was it to showcase the team to Quebec? Was it to make some extra money because, you know, you're not bringing enough fans here in Ottawa? What was the thinking there?
Well, I mean, what's really important to clarify is it wasn't our idea by any stretch. We received a phone call from the finance minister in the province of Quebec. So, of course, I take the phone call because I've been very upfront. One of the most important things we need to do as a club is enhance our appeal in the province of Quebec, meaning Gatineau. So I'm always going to want to talk to people in the provincial government. They presented an idea. We took it back. We went back to them and said, we're not interested. It was as simple as that. There are not going to be games played in Quebec. So I think I wasn't emphatic enough when this topic came up because it was right around Eugene's death. But I need to be emphatic. We're not playing games in Quebec City.
So when the CEO of Quebecor, Carl Pelletier, says, because of the death of Eugene Melnyk, that has ended conversations between the team, you would say what? That those conversations had already ended?
Yes, absolutely. We made it very clear shortly after Eugene passed that we would not be playing games in Quebec City. But we did ask them about doing a joint bid on a World Junior Championship, which we explored But then, as most people know, we pivoted and put in a bid with OSAG here in Ottawa. We were unsuccessful, but we're hopeful we'll be successful in future bids.
Okay, so that leaves the question then, what's happening with the Ottawa Senators? And it's a question I really want to get into when we talked last time, right after Mr. Melnyk's passing. So, you know, for obvious reasons. But it's been a while now, and the NHL commissioner has already told us the team has good management. There's no rush. It is owned by Eugene Melnyk's daughters, and so we're moving on to the next level. Still, though, Anthony, you get business people popping up saying, if it's for sale, I'm interested. The situation with the team right now is what? Is it for sale or is it not?
The club is not for sale. I always find it safe to parrot what Commissioner Bettman says. And I'm proud of the fact that he said there's professional management, considering I'm part of that management team. Myself, our CFO, Aaron Crow, our GM, Pierre Dorion, are running the club. We report into a board of directors that Eugene put in place years ago. And his daughters are, you know, the beneficiaries of the trust, but they're also involved. As a matter of fact, I met with them as recently as yesterday. And their focus, their real intent is to ensure that we become a more progressive club, that we become more focused on equality, you know, inclusiveness. These are things that are important to them. So it's, you know, those are the areas that we're focusing on and working jointly, but they're quite pleased with the direction that we've presented to them, that our intentions are, but that's where the club is. And I find it interesting and a little absurd that people are making comments. Well, if the club's for sale, I'd be interested. Well, if the Dallas Cowboys were for sale, I'd be interested. I couldn't afford it, but you know, I just don't get it. Like it's bizarre to me, but no, the club is not for sale.
Well, I think there's this idea in Ottawa because we've had a charismatic owner who did most of the talking on behalf of the club, that's how the team has to function. But in a lot of other cases, take Toronto just down the highway, for example, you've got big corporations in charge, but you don't have that one individual owner. So there's more than one way to run a hockey team.
Well, exactly. Exactly. Like there's a lot of clubs where, you know, the owner's almost faceless. Look, it was Eugene's passion, and I applaud, you know, as I said, you know, after he passed, before he passed, the Senators are here for one reason, because Eugene Melnyk kept them here. So, you know, God love him and God rest his soul. But yeah, I think moving forward, it's going to be a case of we're going to operate as a management team. And look, we are busy. Like one thing I can tell you is the optimism, the excitement about this club is at a level, well, obviously I haven't seen it in the 2 years I've been at the club, but, you know, even I think back as a fan over the last 5-6 years, there is a lot of excitement. We're getting phone calls from people who used to be, or organizations that used to be sponsors and suite holders wanting to get back in. Season ticket sales are up. Renewals are at probably their highest level. So, no, things are good. Things are exciting and we're busy.
Do Eugene's daughters intend to make an announcement one way or the other about their decision, or are we just assuming that if they're not putting this team up for sale, then they're going to continue to be the owners and be involved to the measure they've been involved in up until now?
Yeah, I mean, I see no need for any public disclosures. You know, it's status quo. If there's two words to take away from, you know, my conversation with you today, it's status quo. We're running the team. The team is stable. The team is not. One thing I will say emphatically and bet my life on, this team will never leave Ottawa.
Well, that's a big statement.
Yeah. Yeah, that's how strongly I feel about it.
And you feel, now that you've been here for a couple of years, that there's a business model in Ottawa that can make this team work here and be successful here?
Well, 100%. And all you have to do, look back about 10 years ago. The season seat base for the Ottawa Senators was in the topper echelon of the league. Revenues were at the topper echelon of the league. Look, there are times when I was a fan before I became a member of the front office. I was a fan of the Senators since they moved came to Ottawa. At times when, well, on the ice, fans show their displeasure by not going to games. And I get that. I was one of those people. You know, the reality is when you look back over the history of the Sens, this is a very, you know, it's a going concern it's a very good operating club that does very well.
And they'll be here for a very long time to come, is your bottom line.
That's the bottom line.
Well, I hope so, Anthony, because I know you probably heard me say this before, but when we were leaving Los Angeles and trying to decide where to live, we had a couple of things. I like to think I had a few offers. I said one thing to my wife. I said, we're not living anywhere that does not have an NHL team. That's my rule. And in Canada, to me, you're not a major city if you don't have an NHL franchise. Sorry, Quebec City, I love you, but you know, I don't want to live in a city that doesn't have an NHL team. So I'm glad to hear you say that, and I think a lot of people will be happy that you've made it crystal clear today, Anthony. Appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate that as well. And if I could, before I go, I'd like to congratulate one of my favorite all-time senators, Jason Spezza, on a wonderful career with his retirement this week. I know he retired as a member of your favorite team. I won't hold that against him, but a great senator and someone I enjoyed watching, you know, in particular in 2007 and that glorious run to the finals. Just a great career and a great guy. So congratulations to Jason.
Well, classy of you to say that, and he sounds like a classy guy. Anthony, when you're raised in Toronto, you can't help it. Senators fans, when they're upset with the team, you said some of them stop buying tickets. We just buy more sushi and pay even more for tickets because we're dumb in Toronto.
Well, look, it's a great franchise. I know a bunch of people in the organization. It is a classy organization, but you can't be a true fan of the Senators and cheer for the Leafs. But I must say I cheered for Jason Spezza.
Yeah, hard guy not to cheer for. Thank you, Anthony.
Thanks.
Anthony LeBlanc, President of Business Operations, Ottawa Senators. Team is staying right here. Brought it up yesterday in passing, and we got the answers for you. It's the Morning Rush, Bill Carroll.
Trending today with Matt Harris.
Stop looking for Megan on the balcony of the live shots of the Jubilee.
She's coming out. The Queen.
Look at our timing here.
Look at that. The place is going nuts.
The crowd is enormous. The Queen and Prince Charles are walking out on the balcony right now. Camilla's right behind Prince Charles. The Queen's up front, and she's a little bit hunched over, and she really does look frail.
Yeah.
But she looks great for her age, though. No doubt about that. Who else are we seeing in the background there?
William, Kate, and their kids.
Yeah.
That Princess Anne, I believe.
But I don't see any Andrew.
No.
That's what we're all looking for, right? Looks like a few last stragglers coming in out onto the balcony to pose. Who just walked past Prince William there? Who was that? Didn't recognize the face. But Andrew's not there on the balcony.
No, not at all.
Now, he hasn't been seen in public so long, he could sneak out. I wouldn't know him.
Princess Anne. I thought I was looking at Princess Margaret. That was such a weird moment for me. For a split second there, I was like, she hasn't been alive in 20 years.
So, what's trending other than this at this very moment?
Yeah, obviously this is a massive moment, the Queen Jubilee. But yesterday, Red Table Talk came out on Facebook Watch, and I know you've been excited for this. Now you're going, what the heck is Red Table Talk? Well, it's Jada Pinkett Smith's Facebook Watch series, which is basically just, I don't know how this is different than like a TikTok Live. I guess it's a little more formal, but it's not that much different. So let's not say
it's got more money behind it than most.
Yeah, and they sell ads and all that stuff. But right off the top, she addressed.
So what are you saying? It's become a TV show now?
Yes, but you can only watch it on Facebook. So it's a show that only airs on Facebook. A talk show on Facebook? Whatever you want to call it.
Who's using Facebook these days?
Apparently lots of people. So you can put the Facebook app on your Apple TV and you can go watch this after work because I know you've been dying to hear what she has to say about alopecia. That's what her first episode was. But here's how she opened the show.
This is a really important Red Table Talk on alopecia. Considering what I've been through with my own health and what happened at the Oscars, thousands have reached out to me with their stories.
Okay, now you want to talk
probably
about...
Probably true.
I don't doubt that at all, but what's her take on what happened at the Oscars? That's really the only thing I care about. No offense to the alopecia people she had on the show, and I'm sure that was an important conversation, but I'm not going to watch it. I just want to know what she had to say about the Oscars.
Now, about Oscar night... My deepest hope is that these two intelligent, capable men have an opportunity to heal, talk this out, and reconcile. The state of the world today, we need them both. and we all actually need one another more than ever. Until then, Will and I are continuing to do what we have done for the last 28 years, and that's keep figuring out this thing called life together. Thank you for listening.
That's it?
Well, then the rest was alopecia talk.
That's it.
That's it.
Wouldn't, I don't know, taking a long shot here, though, wouldn't it be a good start if she said, I forgive him for the joke? Or whatever, I was not offended by the joke. Maybe she was or wasn't, but if she was offended, doesn't it start with her forgiving him for what he said?
Or, I was offended, but that doesn't give you the right to lay your hands on someone.
Something.
Right.
But, you know, you gotta tell us why you forgive him. I assume you've forgiven him if you want your husband to forgive him and vice versa. But, I don't know, it still sounds like her husband is equally a victim in this. And he's not.
No, not even close.
He made a terrible choice in front of the world. Healing starts with him admitting that, not with her trying to backdoor the PR on it. Be interested to hear what Karen Gordon has to say that next week if it's still a big enough story. All right, it's the Morning Rush. Good morning. I'm Bill Carroll. Many people were watching it, and as a result, I think it's going to change in some way maybe we can't even imagine yet how we talk about these really important issues like violent relationships and allegations of sexual assault. And I think watching Amber Heard go from the victim in many people's minds to someone who couldn't be trusted to tell the truth, it was a big deal. And I hope it doesn't change the narrative totally for the negative, but I think it does change the narrative. Ari Goldkind is a criminal defense lawyer and CTV legal analyst. He's on the line right now. How significant do you think this trial is? Are we just being salacious talking about a couple of celebrities, or is it important what happened here?
It's very important what happened here. This is a move for the positive. Let's look at the first point you made in your intro, which is people say it's not newsworthy. That's an absolutely preposterous and ridiculous notion. Let's say you had Johnny Depp recorded on audio and video bragging about assaulting his spouse. And by the way, that would be a reversal of what Amber Heard is on video and audio doing. She brags that she's abusing him. She brags that he doesn't like getting hit and takes it like a baby. She brags that if he wants to sue her and go to a judge and jury and say that he's the abuse victim, she's going to laugh and the jury will never believe him because she's a woman and will be automatically believed. These are very important things to have the pendulum swing back in the Me Too era. And if you look at Amber Heard's utterly despicable, tone-deaf statement after the jury absolutely had her run the board, not only on compensatory damages, Bill, but the punitive award is a really important part of this case that's been horribly missed in the reporting, okay? This is really important stuff to suggest that we need to go back to a time where allegations didn't mean that somebody's life is destroyed, canceled, over, and the tsunami of anti-social media, the second somebody in a he said, she said matter makes an allegation, who may have their own personal animus, their own axe to grind, back to normal human experience. That pendulum needs to swing back to a person who says they're innocent, actually having a moment where the public goes, maybe we don't know all the facts. Maybe this is something that should be aired out. And the only problem, and I'll end my answer here, Bill, is that 99.999% of your listeners, if they're defamed, if they're maligned, if they're smeared by some anonymous bot or egg-shaped thing on Twitter where somebody doesn't use their real name, they don't have the tens of millions of dollars at their disposal that Johnny Depp does to get his reputation back. So I think this is actually extraordinarily newsworthy.
Yeah, I don't think you'd disagree with me, Ari, that we needed a change. We needed women to feel safe to come forward and when they've been abused and have people take their accusations seriously. But I think what you're saying, and if you are, I agree with you, that it went the other way. People like our prime minister, for example, said when women come forward, believe them. In other words, believe that the other person is guilty without even a trial until his name was brought up under similar circumstances. And then, you know, the two parties may have viewed the same situation differently. So he came up with a convenient excuse. I've met Amber Heards in my life. Not many, but I know there are violent women out there who will also lie and manipulate situations. And I think that's the conclusion the jury came to. But is there a danger it'll swing back too far the other way now?
Not a chance. And by the way, the people who tell you that it will are the people who, no disrespect to them, make a living saying things like that. They're not meant to be or paid to be objective. There's no amount of changes you could see prime minister speaking moistly offer that will satisfy any such groups. Remember, this is in many cases a business. This is a business. Everything in terms of our culture now, cancel culture, woke culture, this area of the courts, this is a business for many. At the end of the day, you can't come up with something more anti-democratic, undemocratic, than the idea that if you tick the right demographic checkbox, because that's what we're talking about, if you're the right gender, if you're the right race, if you're the right minority, that automatically gets you believed when you level an accusation against somebody, whether it be abuse, whether it be something that ends with ISM or IST or phobic. That is about as anti-democratic and undemocratic as you can get in a country that purports to be a shining beacon on the hill for democracy, due process, fair trial rights. That's the reason that this is such an important milestone to me that will not set the clock back or make people not come forward. We live in a society now where people are much more comfortable coming forward than they were 30, 50, 75.
But overall, isn't that a good thing?
It is. And that's
not very
point.
Democratic when you're on the receiving end of one of those isms either, right?
No, but that's my point, which is you can't fight back against it unless you have Johnny Depp's tens of millions. And if you go to Google and you smear somebody and it's picked up in a news story, remember, Bill, here's the takeaway. Even for people who disagree with me, you can have somebody charged or an accusation leveled against them. It will get picked up like a tsunami. It will get published. It will get written everywhere. They might tuck in the word alleged. They might, Bill. If they're in a generous mood, they'll tuck in the word alleged. But you know that if that person is acquitted or the charges are withdrawn, it barely makes page 9 of a 12-page paper.
Page 87, last paragraph.
There you go. And my point.
Yeah, for sure. Which so is, do you think, and Aria, just for in the interest of time here, because we're out of it, you know, this is a legal case. This is two people suing each other for libel. And it doesn't have to be precedent setting in a legal way in our country or any other. But you're saying that in the future, jurors and the court of public opinion will all take a second thought, because we'll think nobody seemed more guilty than Johnny Depp. And yet we couldn't have been more wrong. And that will open our minds to all possibilities.
I think it's probably a shorter answer given the lack of time here. I think most Canadians are sane, sensible people that don't adopt the orthodoxy of cancel culture and woke culture, that if you tick the right demographic checkbox, you're an innocent lamb and you're the greatest of the great. I think 100 people sitting at a dinner party talking about Amber Heard or Johnny Depp or any case that has a weird tinge to it will provide the same opinion as the jury. The only difference is the 100 people at the dinner table don't want to do it out loud on anti-social media or to be recorded because they're worried about being canceled. Anything that brings common sense into our human analysis of complicated legal issues, rather than this one-side orthodoxy of being pounded over the head that you must think a certain way, anything that brings common sense back and decency and dignity is something I would fully support.
Thank you, Ari.
Thank you, Bill.
Ari Goldkind, criminal defense lawyer and CTV legal analyst. It's the Morning Rush. Good morning. I'm Bill Carroll.
News Talk 580 CFRA's $1,000 Minute. Brought to you by Alpine Credits. Homeowners get approved.
Let's go to Greeley, Ontario, where Scott is waiting today. He was the 15th person to text us. How you doing, Scott?
Very well, thanks. How are you?
Not bad, but I got this $1,000 just sitting in my wallet, and it's getting in the way. It's kind of heavy. Do you want it?
Yeah, I'd love it. I'll take it for you.
Well, there are a couple things you have to do first. Here are the rules.
10 questions a minute, $10 per correct answer. All 10 gives you $1,000. Have to take your first answer. You can say pass. We'll go back if there's time. You got it?
Yep.
Question number one. Who is speaking to the House committee looking into the use of the Emergency Act later today?
Us.
What time does CFRA election coverage begin tonight?
5 p.m.
How long will the Jubilee festivities last? How many hours?
4 days.
What's the name of Jada Pinkett Smith's new Facebook watch?
Pass.
Which company dropped its sponsorship of golfer Dustin Johnson yesterday?
Pass.
How many hydro customers in Ottawa are still without power this morning?
8,000.
What is the forecasted high today?
Pass.
Who's the Ottawa Senator's President of Business Operations?
Pass.
What time do polls open today?
9 a.m.
Which company CEO sent an email to executives yesterday saying it was time to return to the office?
Elon Musk.
What's the name of Jada Pinkett Smith's new Facebook show?
I don't know. Pass one.
Which company dropped its sponsorship of golfer Dustin Johnson yesterday?
Nike.
All right. And time ran out there. You did a lot of passing.
Yeah,
if you passed that much on the F1 circuit, you'd be the champion.
I know, right?
That's true. Okay, let's see how you did. Who's speaking to the House committee looking into the use of the Emergency Act later today? You passed on that one.
Yeah.
Former Police Chief Peter Slowly.
Oh, shoot. I knew that, too.
There you go. What time does our election coverage begin on the station here on CFRA tonight? You said 5 o'clock. 7 p.m.
Okay.
How long will the Jubilee festivities last? You said 4 days. There you go. What's the name of Jada Pinkett Smith's new Facebook watch? We were looking for Red Table Talk. Which company dropped its sponsorship of golfer Dustin Johnson yesterday? You said Nike. RBC. How many Hydro Ottawa customers are without power this morning? You said 8,000. They've got it down to 300. What's the forecasted high today? You passed. It's 21. Who's the Senator's President of Business Operations? We're looking for Anthony LeBlanc. What time do the polls open in Ontario? You said 9 a.m. And which company's CEO sent an email to executives yesterday saying it was time to return to the office? You said Elon Musk at Tesla. That's $30.
Nice. Not the 1,000, but I'll take it.
What's interesting is one of the correct answers, I asked the wrong question, and you still got
it right.
Give him a bonus $10 for that.
$40.
There you go, $40. Thank you, Scott.
Thank you very much.
8:29, Gord Wilson is standing by. It's the Morning Rush. Good morning. I'm Bill Carroll.
Now, the Inbox. Everybody's talking about on News Talk 580 CFRA.
So were we wrong all morning long that this is kind of one of the dullest elections in a long time and people are not talking about it and I'm overwhelmed with texts and emails about it, Matt? Am I overwhelmed?
No, I got two election-related texts, and one of them I don't even think is dealing with the facts. Got some of your
not
facts
worth
wrong
the
here.
Gas to vote until parties become liable for lying. Robin, Ottawa. Hi, Bill. Referring Ottawa South riding, where Liberal John Fraser has won for 23 years straight. Conservatives even gave up on this riding, sending the youngest PC candidate in Ontario to run against Fraser. Very hard to motivate myself to vote. Ivan in Ottawa. As Dr. Dworkin just said, there are significant times when in-person meetings are required. Talking about more and more virtual medicine. Same in education. Ford government is requiring 2 online learning courses in high school. These are asynchronous only courses. Synchronous e-learning courses are disqualified for the 2 mandatory courses and likely to be taught by private providers rather than public educators. I wonder why this hasn't been mentioned at all during the coverage of this election campaign. I think because even the opposition parties realize that it's probably good for kids to do some online learning. Now, we didn't expect the pandemic to come along just as these rules changed, but I think kids need to do some of that kind of study because that's the future that we're facing. And you still need qualified teachers to do it. Teachers will still have jobs. Hi, Bill. Trudeau is only trying to keep us under the thumb with his crazy controls. Patty and Greeley.
Okay.
I don't think he cares about controlling. How does it control you that you have to wear a mask on a train? There's no control. Where does that nonsense come from? However, I think he's out of touch. I think he doesn't realize most people are acting like the pandemic is over and science be damned because we ran out of choices. There was just too much downside to living in bunkers. Look, the vaccines worked. Most people are not going to get really sick. Yes, sadly, some people still will, and some people are dying every day. But what is the cost of that? Are we really going to hide out for the rest of our lives? Because clearly the vaccines are not going to save every life. This is the new norm, and most people have just recalculated risk, and they've gone on with their lives. Jada Pinkett Smith had that show, The Red Table, for years, not new. She thinks she's a therapist. Yeah, you confused me this morning when you called it new,
okay,
Matt.
So I thought this was new. Apparently it's a new season of the...
See, I thought it had moved to a new format. I thought she'd actually gotten a network to pick it up.
No, still on Facebook. I wasn't aware that she already did this, but it was the first episode since the Oscars. So thanks for the correction. Appreciate it.
Tom from Canada says, if they want an NHL team to play in Quebec, why not ask Montreal to play some games there?
Yeah, they're not giving up the revenue.
No, they're not. And according to the Ottawa Senators, president of hockey operations, they never wanted to. They were approached. They said no. And the story should have ended there, but it did not. And today it did. That's it for me. Who's next?
Andy
the wheel.
Pinson.
Hold on. The Whoa. Wheel of hosts.
Andy. Andy Pinson.
Wow. 2 days in a row landed on Andy.
Lucky guy.
This has been The Morning Rush. I'm Bill Carroll.